In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And I think we're actually live this time. I'm hoping the technical difficulties have ended. We are not live on Twitter, which is unusual, but I think everything else is working properly. With that said, I do have one note for our viewers, listeners. If you've got questions for me about Bright Star or anything, Mel was wanting to do an interview with me when we're done with Bright Star for 1 week and just talk about some of the questions she had. So if you have questions, send them to jared@e6universe.com and I'll pass them on to her and she can include them in her episode for that. And with that out of the way, let's get started here.
The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you.
Looks like we're good on Rumble, Instagram, and YouTube, I'm told, so let's keep on trucking here, I guess. This is Bright Star, Chapter 11. And take it away for me, Luke.
Engendered entropy must always exceed the energy represented by the physical forces which Energemetra 6 countervails. The 10th Tenet.
As a precaution, Andrew stopped them more than 100 yards from Resolute. Around them, the eerie darkness inside the behemoth was punctuated only by a few pinpricks of light, where stars shone through the holes created by the battle damage. In the light from Adamant's floodlights, dead, frozen trees stretched long, decayed fingers into the darkness in the behemoth's core. The dread of the long-abandoned world ship surrounding them was only intensified by the dead plant life hanging in the void. They all donned environment suits except Shauna, who stayed on the bridge to handle Adamant. The suits were made of some kind of stiff fabric that felt almost rubbery to the touch and were pure white on the outside, presumably to reflect as much heat and radiation as possible. The suits were all of one piece, like heavy jumpsuits, except for gloves and helmet that sealed to the rest of the assembly magnetically when rotated and locked into position. It took a surprising amount of time and athleticism to wriggle into their tight confines through the closure on the back. All in all, moving in the suit was awkward, but less awkward than Nate had expected when he was in the middle of squirming into it. The helmet, which had a faceplate large enough not to block his peripheral vision, also felt less confining than he'd expected. Even so, as he took a few careful steps, Nate had a hard time shaking the sensation that he was locked into a straitjacket. When Ty put his helmet on, he yelled,
"How do we talk?"
His voice came through the speakers built into the others' helmets at a high enough volume to make everyone wince.
"Just talk,"
Andrew said in a normal voice, his mic picking up the dry amusement in his tone as if they were all standing within a foot or two of each other and not wearing soundproof suits.
"Oh, sorry."
The embarrassment in Ty's tone barely overcame his cheerfulness.
Now,
Andrew said,
remember, there's no sound in the vacuum. Your helmet swivels. Use your eyes. Sight is the only sense that works out there.
He paused for a moment, then continued more thoughtfully.
For now, I say we leave tools behind so we can move faster. If we need them, we'll have to come back and get them. But
his doubt was obvious in his tone.
For now, I'm more concerned about what might be in that thing than I am about salvage.
Once they had all suited up and they were preparing to enter the airlock, something suddenly occurred to Nate. Where's the air reservoir in these? He asked.
The suit uses air as an insulator. It's spaced throughout the lining. So are the processor and batteries,
Shannon replied.
And if you get a suit puncture, there's a layer of super compressed, closed cell resin in there, too. It'll foam out and plug it. Don't get one, by the way. It sucks.
How does foam save you from a vacuum?
Ty sounded genuinely interested. This time it was Andrew who answered.
Expands to 50 times its size in a fraction of a second, then hardens into a rock when it touches vacuum, or almost anything else.
Fancy, Kevin said. Sharp looking. Saves you from certain death. Can it fly?
Nate couldn't tell whether he was serious or not.
There are directional jets, but they'll use up your air supply real fast. Better to use the mag boots.
Andrew smirked, adding,
if you lose a leg, it's got a built-in tourniquet.
I hope that's not too likely.
Kevin seemed a bit unnerved at the prospect. Shannon's reply deflated his joviality completely.
Considering what we're going out after, it will be a miracle if any of us make it back in one piece.
As the five of them prepared to leave the airlock, Shauna's voice came over their helmet systems.
Andy, Shan, don't die.
Andrew and Shannon froze, but Nate said, no fear, and laid a hand on each of their shoulders, then moved into the airlock. When he emerged into the darkness of the behemoth's belly, Nate immediately pushed himself toward the other vessel before them. It had landed in the center of a frozen meadow in the great dead forest that covered the inside of the behemoth. It was half buried in the earth, with no sign of an airlock anywhere. Nate studied the shape before him as he drifted toward it. When he touched down, his magnetic boots latched to the surface of the craft, and he turned to look behind him, watching the others stream toward him one at a time. Andrew was the first to land directly in front of Nate, his own boots latching. He said,
it looks like the airlock is buried. How do you plan to get inside?
Nate took another look around as Ty landed behind him, flailing for a moment and almost bouncing off until Nate reached out to give him a hand. Shannon snorted in obvious amusement over the calm as she and Kevin both landed without issue. Ty snorted in turn.
At least I'm not afraid to be here.
Shannon let out a sharp laugh.
Little boy, I lost my dad to these things. I'd be a fool if I weren't scared. I don't even know what we're doing here. We're crazy to think we can go into Resolute after it changed.
Before Ty could reply again, Nate broke in. If there's anything alive in there, going in after it would be like sticking our faces in a badger's den. I'd much rather get it to come out to me. Andrew asked,
how do you plan to do that?
First, I want you all off the surface of this thing, Nate said. He pointed at the woods behind them, barely visible in the light reflected from Adamant's powerful floodlights by Resolute's mirror-bright surface. Go hug a tree or something. Andrew laughed grimly, but he unlatched his boots and launched himself for the trees without further comment, Shannon and Kevin following close behind. It took Ty a little longer to figure out how to unlatch his boots, but he followed the others in short order. Nate watched as they passed out of the cone of brilliance shining down on them from Adamant into the dark realm of the behemoth's dead world. When they reached the trees beyond the edge of the clearing and had all successfully caught themselves, he reached above his head and grasped Energemetra 6. Nate couldn't have explained to anyone else how he knew what to do with E6. It was purely instinctive, but he understood how the fields worked at a level that left no room for doubt. He had some idea of what he wanted to accomplish, and instinct told him he didn't need to be precise. Nate gathered the fields around his hands, considered for a moment. Then, using the leverage provided by his boots, he swung his fists at the surface of the ship he was standing on, releasing the Energemetris 6 he held into Resolute's hole as he hit it. A moment later, Ty's voice came through his helmet speakers.
Whoa, I felt that from clear over here.
Shortly after, Shauna's voice followed.
Yeah, something's moving in there. The hole's blocking most of these readings, but that's definitely... Oh, wow.
Shauna went silent, and after a moment, Andrew spoke, his voice strangled.
Shauna, what? What is it?
Sorry, these power readings. I don't know what it's doing, but I keep seeing partial power restored. Then it goes away.
Andrew grunted audibly.
At least it's having trouble.
He paused, then said,
Nate, you want to try that again?
Nate nodded, then realized he couldn't see him at all in the bulky suit, so he simply raised his gloved fists above his head once more, gathered in power, then swung them down to crash into Resolute's hull again. If his last attempt had caused the ship to vibrate, this one was on a completely different level. It was as if the surface beneath him had been struck with an earthquake, and the frozen trees around the others shivered as if in a breeze. This time, Shauna said nothing. After long seconds, Andrew asked,
Shauna, what do you see?
Shauna came back clearly, but she sounded almost doubtful.
It's the same as before, Andy. I can see little flickers of something moving around deep inside Resolute. The power is jumping around even more, if anything, but it's not coming toward you.
Nate thought for a moment, feeling an inexplicable mental pull toward Resolute, as if something beyond the edge of perception was trying to get his attention. He was too busy watching for anything unusual to focus on it, and after a moment he asked, Shauna, can you see what's on the other side of those walls? I need to be over a corridor.
No, but give me a second.
Shauna went silent, then said,
I've overlaid Resolute's blueprints on the hole. This should work. Move to your left.
Nate complied, walking slowly across the hole, making sure to relock his boots with every step.
Okay, stop. Now move toward Andy. No, I mean the other way. Sorry. Okay, right there. That should be the main outer corridor.
Thanks. Nate nodded out of habit, though none of them could see him, then asked, Andrew, I want to make a hole. Any objection? Andrew hesitated, and the doubt in his voice was clear when he spoke.
Can you?
Nate laughed. I'm going to try. Andrew's voice hardened in resolve.
Do it, then.
Nate nodded again and once more raised his hands above his head. This time, what he did with Energemetris 6 was completely different from before. It felt both hot and cold. As his fists came down, Nate released the power he had gathered, simultaneously pulling a shield up around his body. The result was spectacular. Resolute's hole dimpled, then splashed outward in a superheated, glowing cloud of liquid, as if it were a pond and Nate had thrown a stone. The hole material, which had liquefied instantly, flew in all directions. A small amount of the superheated metal hit his shield and streamed around it. Most of the rest splashed inward, coating the inside of the passageway, flash-hardening as it hit. All that remained were tiny spatters flying outward into the free space in the belly of the behemoth. The rest rapidly cooled from bright, glowing globules into silvery slag, fading into the darkness as it drifted away. Nate felt his recamocula prickle uncomfortably with the action, but he shrugged it off, distantly happy it was doing its job.
Wow, what did you do?
Keevan's amazement was almost comical.
Pretty sure I can't explain it, but we're in.
Nate peered into the hole in Resolute as the lights in the vessel's main passageway flickered on and off, creating a strobing illumination that was almost worse than nothing at all. Nate's hands felt slick, as if he were sweating in his suit. and tiny alarm bells went off in the back of his mind, but Shannon's next question distracted him from the sensation.
"What's a badger?"
she asked slowly, almost thoughtfully. Her diction might have been calm, but her tone was tight with tension. Nobody answered, and after a moment she said,
"Changed can rip you into pieces. Little pieces. I don't know what a badger's den is, but there's no way I'm going in there."
The strange pull Nate had felt after he slammed the ship the second time had never quite gone away. It was still there at the back of his mind, reinforcing his resolve. After a long moment, he said thoughtfully, "You should all go back to Adamant. This is my fight." With that, he reached down, grabbing the edge of the hole in Resolute, and unlatching his boots from the surface, he peered down into the bowels of the disabled vessel. Simultaneous exclamations came over his transmitter from Andrew and Shannon. Then Ty said,
"Wait up! I'm coming too."
Nate didn't wait, nor did he answer. The passage flickered rapidly from light to darkness and back again, and some kind of strange growth seemed to be clinging to the floor? No, the ceiling lights were to his right, so the surface he was thinking of as a floor had to be the wall, and the dead growth might simply have been the same sort of plants growing from the wall of the main corridor in Adamant. In the randomly flashing light, it looked like hands reaching out to grab him. The once molten metal covering everything, its silver now splotched with black and gray spots, only made the eerie spectacle worse. Shrugging mentally, Nate pushed off from the skin of Resolute, using his hands to flip himself over into the space below, and twisting to one side so his magnetic boots contacted the floor on his left. As Nate released his grip on the edge of the gaping wound he had made in Resolute's surface, he noted how thick the wall actually was. The ship's silvery skin was almost 2 inches thick by itself, but inside that was a foot-thick, stratified layer of what looked like rubber or resin, with alternating dark and light stripes. Quickly, Nate looked both forward and backward down the flickering corridor. Nothing was in sight except 2 closed hatches on his left, and what might have been a third, far ahead of him down the passage. The clamor on the comms had almost sorted itself out, finally. And Andrew was saying,
"Go too. Shannon, you should stay."
Her snort of derision might have made Nate smile if his stomach wasn't trying to crawl up his throat.
"No way. I'm not letting you go in there alone either."
"None of you should." Nate was quiet but firm. This time it was Ty who snorted.
"Yeah, right. This is exciting."
Andrew actually groaned aloud, but Kevin laughed. "No way, mate. I'm not feeling as enthusiastic as Ty is, but he's right. We're with you." "Your choice." Nate stepped forward, squinting in the intermittent light from above, then reached into the fields and instinctively copied the light he'd seen Loredan use when he first awoke aboard Ocarist. It helped somewhat to have a steady source of illumination, though the still flashing overhead lights lent the entire atmosphere an air of unreality. Nate started slowly forward, stopping at the first hatch on his left and staring at it. He reached down to try the hatch activator, but it did nothing. The power must be too intermittent, Nate thought, trying again.
"You'll have to enable local control and hook your suit up to it."
Shannon's tone was tart, and Nate turned his head to look back at the hole he'd come in through. Shannon's helmet poked over the edge, her hands gripping the melted and rehardened skin of the ship.
"Hurry up if you're going inside. Go already."
Ty's voice was somewhere between excited and annoyed. Nate saw Shannon roll her eyes, but she didn't argue, flipping over to land with her magnetic boots on the corridor floor. Nate happily stepped to the side as she clumped slowly forward and pulled the cover off the little panel, then attached a line from her suit. Once she was hooked up, she began manipulating the manual controls beneath. Ty, Kevin, and finally Andrew followed Shannon through the hole one at a time, looking around as they did. Ty quickly copied Nate's tiny ball of light, while the others all looked one way, then the other down the corridor. "Andrew, how much of the ship do you think is still accessible?" Nate was looking at Andrew as he asked, and Andrew's lips pursed in thought while Nate continued. Ty, you watch that way. Keevan, that way. If you see anything moving, say so. Shannon made a little sound of triumph, and the hatch in front of her slid open before Andrew could answer Nate's question. Nate stepped to the hatch and peered inside, sending his little ball of light to dance through the cabin. It was empty.
Shan, you should let him stand in front of those when you open them from now on, in case something's waiting inside.
Andrew sounded grim, and he turned to Nate.
The bridge is gone. No way it survived that kind of impact. If I had to guess, we'll be able to get about 70% of the way around the outside of the ship. The way the ship's structural integrity is designed, it will have flattened up to a certain point and be intact everywhere else. At least, that's what we've seen before.
Nate nodded. Okay, let's stay together. We can go this way first. Nate pointed in the direction he'd already started. Where should we expect the first cross corridor? Andrew's grimace was plain even through the glass of his faceplate.
Probably behind us. There should only be two access points to the core, and I'm guessing the one that comes out near the bridge got crushed.
Nate nodded again, turning to head further down the passage. At the next doorway, Nate stood in front of the hatch with Shannon off to one side as it opened, but again the cabin before him was completely empty. The same pattern continued, inching down the passage, with Keevan watching the rear and Ty keeping an eye ahead, while Shannon carefully worked each panel. Even with the little lights that Nate and Ty kept hovering above their shoulders, the flickering overhead wore on them, putting them more and more on edge. And it was easy to imagine something coming out from behind each rib that jutted from the side of the corridor on their right, or from the veritable jungle of dead plants on their left. Strangely, as they moved, Nate felt the pull on him diminishing, as if they were walking away from its source. After the sixth hatch, Shannon said,
I need somebody else to plug in. My suit's battery isn't going to last forever, and the fuel cell can't keep up.
After that, Nate and Andrew took turns with her, which Andrew said would allow the suit's fuel cells to recharge the batteries sufficiently. It took almost a full hour of slow progress to make it to the crumpled end of the passage. All they found was room after empty room. When they finally turned around to retrace their steps, they all felt a jolt telegraphed through the structure of the ship and looked at each other. Andrew said,
Shauna, talk to me. What's going on?
Her voice came back a moment later, a bit fuzzy with static.
I saw it move, but it looks like it's still in the core, Andy.
Understood.
Andrew looked at Nate, who shrugged, and continued forward, back toward their entry hole. After they'd walked perhaps halfway back, Keevan said thoughtfully,
I'm a wee bit surprised there ain't more decks. This level only covers a tiny bit of the interior of this great big ball.
There was only silence for a while, then Andrew said,
The Implacable class ships were made for families. Most of them were Adamant's size. Resolute was a seed ship. We could have rebuilt an entire tech base with her, even on a dead planet or a moon. Even so, she was still only built for one family.
Silence fell again, and they walked slowly on beneath the flickering lights. When they reached the hole again, Nate carefully skirted it and continued on to the first hatch they hadn't checked on the other side, where the process began again. Two hatches further along, Nate found a long, featureless hallway stretching into the core of the ship, with an extra heavy hatch at the far end. Whatever the pull Nate had been feeling, it was coming from somewhere ahead and to his right, through the bulk of the ship. He started to turn down the passage, but Andrew called,
Wait!
His voice almost panicked. After a moment, he continued more calmly.
Shouldn't we check the rest of the ship first?
Nate hesitated, then shrugged, and passed the hallway, continuing down the long, curving corridor to the next room. They progressed, room after room, only stopping once to explore what Andrew said was the vessel's machine shop. Twice they felt vibrations through the ship's hull, but both times Shauna confirmed that she couldn't see any significant movement. As their path curved around, Nate felt them coming closer and closer to the source that had been drawing him onward. It took longer on this side of the ship before they reached this opposite, equally crumpled end of the passageway. But even before they reached it, they found something unusual. Ty was the one who spotted it as Shannon was opening a hatch. Craning his neck as best he could in the confines of the suit, he said excitedly,
"The next hatch is welded shut."
Nate grunted, but the hatch was sliding open, and he didn't have time to look. When he was certain the cabin before him was empty, though, he turned to peer down the passage toward the next doorway. As Ty had said, the hatch had darkened patches around its perimeter, as if it had been hastily welded shut.
Could there be a change in there?
Even Ty was a bit subdued at the prospect. They all stopped in front of the hatch in question, squinting in the strobing light. Nate could clearly feel the force that had been drawing him onward, now right in front of him. Whatever it was had to be inside this cabin. Shannon plugged her suit into the same port as before, but when she pulled the cover off the control panel, she whistled softly.
There's still air in there, but it's barely breathable. The CO2 levels are high, but it won't kill somebody.
She made a face that Nate could barely see through her suit's faceplate.
Not yet.
Why would the monsters weld a door shut in their own ship?
Ty asked, tracing the weld along one side of the hatch with a gloved finger. The welds had obviously been made in haste, as they were ugly and discolored, covering the crack where the hatch met the wall without penetrating to any depth.
They wouldn't,
Andrew replied.
And remember, Resolute wasn't theirs in the first place. They took it from us. From other people, I mean.
So, there could be somebody in there?
Ty sounded half afraid and half excited. Shh! Keevan's voice came over their helmet speakers. He was holding one hand up behind him, and he had his helmet pressed to the wall next to the hatch. A moment later, he kicked the hatch with his boot. Then again and again, never taking his helmet away from the wall. "Crot," Keevan said, after pausing for another long moment. "There's somebody there."
"With that hatch welded shut, we can pretty much assume it's not one of the monsters,"
Shannon said.
"That's a human in there. That's one of our people."
After a moment of silence, Keevan said, "Well, we can't pressurize this ship again, no way. How do we get him out?"
"First,"
Shannon said grimly,
"somebody's got to break down those welds and get that hatch open. And we can't be at this for long. Even if the monster leaves us alone, the air in there isn't going to last forever."
As if to emphasize her words, another vibration came through the structure of the ship. Leaning against the wall of the corridor, Nate spoke. "I think I can get it open, but this will be tricky. Do we have an extra suit?" Shannon's snort came over the comms.
"Nope. You're using Shauna's, and we only had two extras to start with."
"Well," Nate's tone was dry, "we need one for whoever's in there to use. Keevan and Ty head home. Ty can come back with Keevan's suit." Ty and Keevan looked at each other and shrugged. Then they both headed back down the corridor while Nate pushed forward toward the sealed hatch. "Better give me some room," he said, then concentrated and grasped Energemetress 6 again. His first task was to carefully create a tiny bubble of gray energy around his suit's right glove. Then he removed the glove, leaving his hand free inside the bubble of Energemetress 6. As he pulled the glove off, Nate noticed a fine stream of dust filtering out of it to hang in the vacuum. His earlier stunt must have damaged it when his body expelled the entropic energy. He should have thought of that. Shaking off the thought to focus, Nate touched the first weld around the perimeter of the hatch and concentrated. Slowly, the bubble of gray around his hand grew over the surface of the wall to surround his palm, remaining pressurized as it did, clinging to the surface like a soap bubble. After a minute or two, the bubble had grown to encompass the entire hatch, and a fine dust was trickling out from under Nate's palm, just as he'd experienced in Richland's class when he made a handprint in the stool he was sitting on. It seemed that however he externalized entropy, it flowed from his hands first, if there was something available to absorb it there. It took a full 10 minutes for Nate to completely remove the weld, growing the bubble to encompass the entire hatch in the process.
When he was done, there was a crater that looked vaguely like a handprint in the surface below where his palm had been. The weld had obviously been completely gone for some time before he actually noticed. There had been 12 welds total surrounding the hatch, and for 10 more minutes, Nate continued to dissolve them slowly, increasing the size of his bubble the entire time, until it filled the corridor for 4 feet in both directions. Nate's judgment of the damage he was causing improved quickly, but he had no control over the entropy he externalized, other than to notice that it did seem to prefer whichever of his hands was against a solid object. He was also getting faster with each weld, and his air bubble was so big it was becoming difficult for him to maintain control over it. Once, another vibration rocked the ship, causing him to lose concentration enough for the bubble to slip and blast a tremendous stream of air down the passage in the direction they'd come from. Nate had removed his other glove after the first weld, and when he finished with the third, he finally spoke. "Is there any reason I shouldn't just melt the rest of these out?" Andrew and Shannon were both standing toward the back of Nate's bubble, but Ty had yet to return with Kevin's suit. Shannon's voice immediately came back over his helmet transmitter.
"Nope, that will work."
Nate's lips twisted and he shrugged to himself. Then he reached to touch a fourth weld and just heated it up as fast as he could. The fifth weld lasted barely 15 seconds, leaving a molten stream of metal drooling into the air to form globules of hardening slag. The molten metal created an odd contrast with the ice crystals that were forming around his hand where it touched the door. The rest of the welds followed in short order, and less than 2 minutes later, the temperature around Nate had risen by at least 10 degrees. Matching the heat in the air was the heat that spread through his recamocula. It was like having the sun shining on just that portion of his arm and shoulder, leaving him feeling hot and sick. Wishing he could wipe his brow and using his glove to bat away a stray bead of the slag, he said, "About time to open it. Ty, where's the suit?" Ty's reply was immediate.
"Coming, just a sec."
Nate had a minute to rest while Ty finished his return trip. As he approached and passed into Nate's bubble, he whistled.
"Wow, this is cool. Could I take my suit off?"
Nate laughed. "You could. But this is for whoever's inside that compartment." Again, as if to punctuate his words, a vibration came through the hull of the ship. Nate grimaced. "The question is, can we get them out now?" In reply, Shannon plugged her suit back into the panel next to the door. After a moment, she said,
"Okay, here we go."
And the hatch slid slowly open. Floating on the other side was a girl, squinting against the sudden glare of their lights. They all stood still for a long moment, their boots locked to the deck, just staring at her. Long black hair framed a face so drawn it was painful to look at, and her skin was turning yellow. Her blue eyes were dull, and she seemed on the point of collapse. Her lips formed a single word that they couldn't hear through their helmets. Then she went boneless in a dead faint. As she did, the strange pull Nate had been feeling since they entered Resolute disappeared, and the ship shook almost as hard as it had when Nate first used Energemetris 6 to hit it from the outside.
"Guys!"
Shauna's tone was high and almost panicked.
"It's moving!"
And that concludes Chapter 11. The Energemetris 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like crisis pregnancy centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
Well, either way, folks, I think that concludes our reading for the day and for the rest of this week. So next week, expect a totally different thing. we're going to have a Winter Night reading. This is another book that I've just recently gotten published. We're planning to read the whole thing, and it should be released on Christmas Day at the normal time. It will not be live streamed, but the plan is to get it out for everybody to enjoy. Thanks for being here, and thank you, Luke. Thank you, Second. Thank you, Third, and we will catch y'all next week.